At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
With Robinhood, not only can you trade individual stocks and ETFs, you can also seamlessly buy and sell crypto at low costs. Trade all in one place. Get started now on Robinhood.
Trading crypto involves significant risk. Crypto trading is offered through an account with Robinhood Crypto LLC. Robinhood Crypto is licensed to engage in virtual currency business activity by the New York State Department of Financial Services. Crypto held through Robinhood Crypto is not FDIC insured or SIPC protected. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Securities trading is offered through an account with Robinhood Financial LLC, member SIPC, a registered broker dealer.
Between good insurance and also having that backup, like, you know, I've there's been multiple moments in particular within that kind of journey that I thought, I don't know how people do it when they don't have money in the bank or good insurance or transportation or all those kind of key things.
Thank you so much for listening to our podcast. I just wanted to give a shout out for anyone who is interested in being a guest. It is completely anonymous, so we'll let you choose a fake name and we will hide identifiable information so you can come on the show and share freely. It is a full hour to an hour and a half with me, Barbara, and we'll do a deep dive on your finances, where you're doing well, where maybe you're struggling, and come up with a game plan for how to reach your financial goals. To be a guest, you just need to put a submission in either on Instagram or on our website, www.futurerichpodcast.com. And you just need to be a female. As we've said before, this podcast is produced with Amy, Alex, and myself, so an all-female team. And our goal is to help improve financial education amongst women. So that is why we interview women about their finances. So if you're listening to this and you're interested in being a guest, please put in a submission on our website, www.futurerichpodcast.com, or send us a message on Instagram.
Hello, and welcome to Financials Podcast Future Rich. I am your host, Barbara Ginty, and I'm also a CFP, which is a certified financial planner. And I am back today with our former guest, Minnie. Hi, Minnie.
Hello, Barbara. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming back on. It's been a long time. You're one of the OGs. So you first came on the show, episode 93, back in 2020.
It's been a long time. Well, and I came back on for a check-in like 4 years ago.
Yep. And so that is episode 132. You came back on for a check-in in 2021. So yeah, it's been a minute.
It has. A lot of life happens in 4 or 5 years, I tell you.
Yeah. Oh my God, I believe it. So for our listeners who maybe haven't gone back and listened yet, so if you're listening to this and you don't know who Minnie is, go back and check out episode 93 for her original air date when she first came on, and then her follow-up on episode 132. And then while we're waiting for our listeners to do that, why don't you fill us in on your age, location, all that jazz? What's going on?
Sure. Now I feel like I listened back to those old episodes. Now I'm like, wow, this time I have to change. My info is different a little bit. So hi. I'm Minnie. I am 40. I turned 40 this year. So big year.
Big year.
Very big year. Lots of parties. I will say that when it's like your era of turning 40, it's like, oh, there's a lot of parties to go to. This is fun.
It is fun.
And I work full time. I'm a transportation planner. I work for the state and state government, and I have 2 children. Last time I was on, I was very pregnant with our second, married, and yeah, moved kind of back closer to where I'm from. But had lived out of state for a long time, and we've been out here in our current city and house for almost 7 years. So it's been before I came on the first time.
Yeah, and you were in Minnesota, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Born and raised.
And your husband was a psychologist.
He's a psychologist.
Yep. Yes. Okay.
Yep. And he actually has made a job change since I was on last, just this last year. he moved from working like for a large healthcare organization to more of a smaller private practice. Okay. Still working for someone else, you know, not his own private practice, but that has been one of the big shifts, kind of going from salary to more of a fluctuation in income. On his
Oh, side. Okay. Yeah, that's a big difference.
Yeah, that was one that I was kind of thinking back, and this last four years in particular has like, I look back and one of the lessons learned, I feel like, is that yes, you want to have a really good emergency fund.
Really? Okay,
because we've used it.
Yeah, why is that your lesson? For those who listen, and I always push a big emergency fund. I feel like I err on the side of like extra is better.
Yeah. You know, so if we last time we talked 4 years ago, I remember it was a little nerve wracking because state government was maybe going to shut down, which mm-hmm. we're actually in that situation again.
Right.
Year, 4 years later. But I remember talking about like, oh, it'd be nice to have a little more buffer. And we did do that. And it was great. It took some of that stress off at that time. But sometimes it's the things you're not expecting that happen, like a total
yeah.
vehicle and smoke damage to your house that you have to relocate for 7 weeks with an infant and a preschooler and a dog and your whole household. And then also just things like this job change where my husband has more variability in his income. So having that kind of that cash on hand for those later months has been really, really important for us.
Oh yeah, definitely. And so we, how did the smoke thing happen?
Oh, long story, but yeah, it was a lack of sleep and an oven that had plastic left in it.
Oh no.
So very much. Yeah, it was, thankfully there was no structural damage, but, it was an insurance, a very, very large insurance claim. So we had the house fully cleaned and, repainted and everything. And the reason I say emergency fund is really important is that we had way more options because we had cash on hand. So if you ever are in a horrible situation of, you know, smoke damage or water damage or those things, you know, your insurance typically will put you up like in a, depending on the situation, like an extended stay hotel. And when you have small children and a very large dog, that is not ideal. So we were able to actually do an Airbnb for that full 7 weeks, but we had to pay up front and insurance would reimburse us. So that's why I say an emergency, like having that cash on hand, like it was still a horrible experience. Of course, it was not easy to go through.
No.
But it was way better that we weren't living in a hotel for 2 months.
Yeah. And that's why I've never had anyone, I mean, I feel like some people like don't love when I'm like, yeah, why don't we get that up to 50,000 or, you know, whatever the number is. They're like, oh, okay. And they're like, oh, is it invested? I'm like, nope. Cause you don't know when there's going to be a problem. Right. And like you said, the insurance would pay for it, but you had to pay for it up front. Otherwise that would have been on a credit card accruing interest while you're waiting for the insurance company to pay you back. And even if you wanted to like improve the quality of your life for 7 weeks and say, okay, insurance is paying X, we're going to add a little bit to that because this is a comfortable situation to be in with an infant. We're okay with that. Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you had the emergency fund.
Oh, 100%. And it just, and then the other thing, I mean, I think life happens, right? So we have one of our children turned out to have a peanut allergy and had to go through a treatment, which thankfully insurance covered. But when you sign the paperwork, it says you could pay up to $20,000 for the treatment process. And then our other child actually has a rare medical condition that was diagnosed just a couple of years ago. So we've had a lot of unexpected expenses that have popped up. And, you know, thankfully we have excellent health insurance. So in general, we're not going bankrupt, but it is like we've had times when it's been really wonderful to have that cash on hand and not worry so much.
Yeah, it takes a level of the financial stress out of it. It's enough to have a sick child and have to worry about it, but then to get the bill and then feel like that anxiety-ridden response when you open it or when you see that on the waiver you have to sign to say whether or not insurance covers is up to $20,000. Because they often don't tell you what insurance is going to cover in advance, especially if it's you're going in because your child is sick. You're not like, well, actually, let's wait and see. Can you call insurance and get the billing code before we see the child? Like, that's not how you do it, you know?
No. And even when you do, I mean, that was the peanut allergy treatment, oral immunotherapy. Thankfully, we could check beforehand, but there's still some uncertainty, especially in newer treatments. Thankfully, it's getting more well-known. But and even, you know, genetic testing, all these, there's lots of things that our other kiddos needed that, you know, I realized even when we had to call the ambulance the very first for her, like not even hesitating, right? Because you know that
right.
between good insurance and also having that backup, like, you know, I've there's been multiple moments in particular within that kind of journey that I thought, I don't know how people do it when they don't have money in the bank yep. or good insurance or transportation or all those kind of key things.
Yeah, it just adds another layer of stress that you don't need.
Yeah, for sure.
So, okay, so we'll talk to you. The emergency fund is good. So talk to me about income. How has income changed over the last 4 years, or has it?
Yeah, it actually has. My husband, I would say he makes a little, well, I think last time we talked about how he got a pretty good increase. And then I'd say his has kind of steadily increased kind of a little bit over time. Okay. And now he makes about, this will be the first like full calendar year that he's at his new job. So we're still kind of seeing, but the way it works is that he kind of, the more patients he sees, then the more income he makes, right? So right now we're kind of balancing it where he's working a little bit less than 40 hours a week. And like, that's kind of breaking even with what he made before is what we think it'll be. So that's been pretty steady on that side. Great that he's got a little bit of flexibility out of that, which has been nice. On my side, actually, usually I feel like you talk to government employees and it's like, oh, my income hasn't increased much, but I've been pretty fortunate in a kind of number of ways. One, just obviously I still had it. Now I maxed out on staff increases, but I wasn't until this past year. And then also I was able to, my position is actually reallocated. So I kind of went up a little bit more in the, kind of got a little couple extra steps in there. And then also we did have a really, 2 years ago was our last kind of union contract negotiations. And between the two years is a 10% increase. So I looked back and I think the last time we talked, I was making about $65,000 a year and now I'm at 95-ish.
Oh, wow. That's a huge jump.
Yeah.
And then what is your husband at just about? I know it's like,
you know, I, like I said, I'm a little uncertain of how it'll like totally pan out, but I'd say it's about 120-ish is be what I would guess. It will depend, you know?
Yeah, it'll fluctuate.
It depends on how many. Yeah, yep. So I'd say, I think when I looked at our taxable income this last tax season, we were at like 170. But that's, of course, I think some of that though is, I think that must have been with, I always get confused if that's the taxable gross, because we do contribute both pre-tax and post-tax too.
Post-tax, yeah. And also you said that when you looked at your tax return, it was a joint tax return, which why don't you let our listeners know why that's important?
Yeah. So anyone who has been in the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program and is married knows that you usually, because the income-based programs, usually there's, unless you both have a lot of student loan debt, I think, but a lot of us end up filing separately for the tax. Like you pay more in taxes, but you're paying less per month for your payment. And so we did do that for many years. But a couple of years ago, my husband's loans were forgiven through that program.
Yay.
So that was a huge, it felt like, talk about like a big weight off. It felt like getting a second mortgage. So it was six figures.
Why don't you tell them how much was forgiven?
Yeah, I think it ended up being around $100,000. I think total we paid more than, you know, he originally borrowed, of course, just with payments. Mm-hmm. We did get lucky though with the student loan pause and stuff in 2020 in those years. And then there was some other kind of, there's like a 1 year kind of period there. I don't want to say it's more relaxed, but they kind of made it a little bit easier for a little while for folks.
Yeah.
Kind of got, the system didn't work correctly, so again, they were trying to help people get through that backlog. So that was a huge deal, and then it was kind of like, oh my goodness, we can actually just file jointly. So the tax benefit, that's been, I mean, obviously not having a loan payment is great, but then also there's that tax
benefit. The tax benefit. So you have a better budget because the loan payment is gone, even though it was income-based, it still was significant, and then you're saving more on taxes by married filing joint. Right. Because if you had Doug Mary filing joint with the student loan payment, the payment would have been even higher. And then it makes the forgiveness, not depending on the math, not as attractive if the payment is so high.
For sure.
So how has it been going budget wise? Now your income went up dramatically and but expenses. Now you have two children before you were pregnant. So how has it worked out with expenses? The loan payment's gone, but how is it childcare?
Yeah, expenses definitely are up compared to 2020. There's no question about that. I think we were at a good spot where we're still saving really aggressively for retirement. It's like my husband's putting, I think, 20% split between pre and post tax. Okay. And I'm pretty similar. I think I'm not counting the pension. I think I'm putting about 17% split between pre and post tax in the 457B. So that's like the deferred comp option I have. Plus we have like a 1% mandatory contribution to a healthcare savings account, and then also the pension, of course. So I think when I totaled it up, it's almost like 25%, I think, around there that I'm putting in between the different, pension, I am fully vested now. So that's another.
Yes. Yeah, so I was going to say, how many years do you have in now with the state?
6.5 years. So I think when I joined, it was 5 years to vest. And now I think it's 3 years to vest for our program.
Okay. Yeah. And have you ever looked at your pension numbers, like what it'll be?
I have actually. And I think, and that's one of the things that's kind of, I should have pulled that up here. I can grab it quick. It's a little bit confusing, right? partly, obviously, there's a lot of details. So anyone who has a pension option has looked at things. It's partly dependent on what you decide for.
What you select for.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
For the payout.
So for me, that it varies, right? Depending on what that is. But for,
for
a single.
Well, what about for your contract? How many years do you need to have in to get your max pension? Is it, because contract, it's usually contract specific. So it's like 20, 25 years. Do you know what it is?
We have a formula. So there's a percentage based. So they use there's like a years of service.
Okay.
So if I stayed in, so like this would be assuming that I kind of stay with the state all the way through till retirement now.
Okay.
I think I said that 67, I think is what I put in there.
Okay.
So it'd be like 33 years of service. And then they have like they look at your high five salary and, they have like a formula they use. My single benefit would be just under $4,500 a month.
Great. That's fantastic.
So, and of course, the thing that's kind of been funny, we've been talking about like looking at, at the different kind of possible income sources, obviously pension and savings and Social Security. But then it's also the question of like, well, how much are we going to need? And what are costs going to look like? Right. I think in this time of where we've seen a lot of inflation, it's like, well, $1 million today is not going to be the same as $1 million, in 2050.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And then on that, because your husband's not going to have a pension, if I remember correctly.
Correct. Yeah, he just has a 401k.
So what does it show if you want it to, and remind me how old your husband is.
He's 5 years older, so he's 45.
45, okay. So remind me, or why don't you tell me what it shows? Do you have two, you should have some options. I haven't looked at Minnesota State, What about the 100? Is there a pop-up on there where if you choose your husband and he passes away, you go back to single? What does the 100% pop-up look like?
They call it a bounce back benefit.
Oh, thank you.
Yep.
A bounce back? That makes so much more sense than pop-up. I always have to explain, New York State calls it pop-up. And people are like, what's a pop-up? Yeah, bounce back sounds way better.
Yeah, so if it's for 100% joint and survivor, it's basically $4,000 is the benefit if we both have 100%. Yeah. Yep.
You would each get you would get 4,000 if any, and then he would get 4,000 if anything happened to you. But if anything happens to him, you would go back to approximately 4,500.
Yep. Yep. Exactly. Yep.
Okay.
And then there's other. We have like a 75% option and a 50% option as well. So that would be like where I think you basically maintain more of your benefit and maybe less for the survivor, right? So like,
yep, exactly. Yeah, you get less for your spouse.
Yep, yep. And all those options have a bounce back. Obviously, I guess there's a lot of more detailed work on that to look at in the future, but.
Yeah, there's a lot of detail work on it. And I would always say to clients is there's no right or wrong, but you just want to make an educated and informed decision. And what happens when you're planning for your retirement as a household is if you lose your spouse, your expenses do not get cut in half. Mm-hmm. Because you're going to lose one Social Security benefit right out of the gate. And then if you lose the Social Security benefit and the pension and you had two Social Securities and one pension, you had three sources of income, and now you go down to one. One person has one source of income. So you just want to plan it out. There's no right or wrong, but you want to run the math on it. And often with the bounce back, if you look at what you're spending to get that type of coverage, you know, like for that income that you'd be generating, it's pretty significant. Now the difference is you as a female will statistically live longer than your husband. You also have an age gap, right? So most likely, and hopefully not, but like statistically speaking, you will live some point as an older adult without him. So you would just want to run the numbers on the, I would say you'd want to do some coverage probably, but you'd want to run the math on what does it look like if we only have one person and what does it look like depending on who that is. And with your husband being the higher income earner, most likely what you want to do is defer his Social Security to the highest amount, take yours earlier, and then have coverage on the pension. And then that way between two Social Securities and the pension, and if both of you have it, there's always two incomes for the household. And with both of you alive, which is what we hope is the majority of your retirement, you have three sources of income, which are fixed. And we'll just say, even if you did the 100%, that's $4,000 in pension. And then let's just say your Social Security comes to you if you collected it slightly earlier, but let's just say, like, I don't know what our Social Security collection, but let's just say our Social Security collection is 70. So maybe you collected 65 or 67 and your husband waits till 70. But let's say yours is 2,000 and his is 4,000 or something like that because of the slight income disparity, not significant, but yours was lower previously. You could potentially have around 10,000 a month coming in with just fixed income, which doesn't replace what you have now, right? It would be about half, actually a little bit more. Those would like replace your husband's gross, and then you'd make up the difference from investments, give or take. I'd have to see your Social Security numbers to get it approximate.
I do have those, actually. Or at least I do have them.
Yeah, okay, what are they?
What age? Well, it says it's an estimate based on how old, right? So if I retire at 67, it's saying $2,900 a month for me.
Okay, perfect. And then what about your husband at 70?
For him at 70, which I will say that 4,000.
Oh, I nailed it for your husband.
Yeah, you sure did.
I said 4,000. I was a bit off on yours, but if you took yours at 62, what is it? Is it two?
62, that would be, sorry, I have to go back and forth between documents here.
No, it's okay.
Just 1900, basically, just over 1900.
Okay. All right, so I wasn't far off for guessing. But I'll use your 67 number because that's when you said you'd collect the pension and then your husband would be the 70 number, which, you know, obviously he would hit 70 before you hit 67. Mm-hmm. But then that would bring in between the two, that would bring in 11,000. Between the three, 11,000 in income, right? Just with that.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax tip and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
If you cover each, so you take the hit, but then as a household, no matter what happens, no matter who it is who's alive, you'd have eight gross, right? So combined, you'd have 11, but you'd stagger yours. So maybe you wouldn't wait exactly till 67. You'd have to see where your budget is, but maybe you say, I'm going to take it at 65 and I'm going to retire from the state at 65 because my husband's then 70, right? Mm-hmm. So he's going to hit Social Security and retire at 70. You're going to take your pension and take your social at 65 because that aligns with the overall plan of staggering the Social Securities. And then you're just going to cover each other. Or maybe your husband says, you know, with my Social Security, I don't need the full 4,000 on the pension. If that were to be the case, we could do 75%. And then that's fine. You know your own history, you know, family history and genetics and so forth. But give or take, you'd have about 11,000 as a household with this structure. And then you have a lot saved. So that's not including what you would be pulling from savings. And in theory, your expenses are less than, right? So at 65, your kids are grown, yeah. House is paid yep. for, no student loans. And the other thing that people always forget about with planning their retirement is you're not paying in the FICA taxes, which work out to be 7% and change. You're not paying that. And you're not saving.
Yeah, that's a really good point, right? Because right now, like, we are definitely not we're living on way less than we make, right?
Yes.
We're putting 20%
away.
Plus, we're also saving for college and other.
Yep.
And I will say, we are probably, I kind of laugh thinking back. I mean, anyone who has child or school age kids knows this, but I've heard people say, like, yeah, you think the daycare stage is the most expensive, but it's not. Because yes, daycare is very expensive and like childcare, but now even when kids are in school, you have to pay for summer care, which can be more expensive right. per day than an infant.
It's crazy.
And so like every March, you're like, I think we've been having to pay out like almost $3,000 in March to prepay summer, right?
Summer, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But also, I think we just have recognized there's just other costs, right? To as kids, but eventually, yes, kids will launch too. By the time we're retired, we won't have those costs either. And we do have quite a bit more saved. So we did, I can't remember where we were at last time exactly, but my husband has about 300,000 in his 401k. And then I've got about one four. I finally did roll over my old 401k. I finally did the math and looked at the percentages, like the fees and stuff. And I was like, oh, I should have done this a while ago. So I would, I think that's a, especially if you work, I mean, that's the thing, if you are with a state, if you work for like a governmental agency and have like a deferred comp option, like look to see for rollover, because I would be shocked if people had lower fees.
Than the state plan. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The state plans are usually very well run. So
I think
what is
140.
Your... Okay, perfect. So you have total about 450,000 saved. For
yep.
retirement.
Yep. Which for is great. Yeah, in retirement accounts. Yep.
Great. And then the emergency fund looks strong at 80,000.
Yep. We got a part of that is CD, like 50,000, and then about,
okay,
depending on the day, right? If we paid for childcare
yeah.
that month. About 30 to 35,000 in the bank, usually.
Okay, perfect. And why don't you tell our listeners, because I always think it's really interesting, like where you are, what childcare costs. I mean, it's generally expensive all over, but what are you spending for childcare?
You know, I forgot, ours just went up. I'd say it's averaging about, I mean, for sure over $1,000 a month.
Okay.
I think it's about $50 a day. Plus there's some other, you know, like a snack thing. And we did actually, I guess that's one thing. We did change from using a daycare for our youngest. And he was more expensive because he was at a licensed daycare center versus an in-home provider. So it was more expensive than we paid for our daughter. But then now he actually has transitioned full-time to the preschool our daughter used to go to. It's slightly more expensive or about the same as what you're paying for a daycare. But thankfully they do run year round, which has been a huge, they have like a couple week closure between sessions, but they do run year round. So that's been a huge win for us.
Oh, good. That's great. That's really nice. Well, without just using the retirement at 450,000. So obviously you're contributing significantly to both you and your husband, but even without the contributions, if we just use the rule 72, and it was making 7.2% compounding interest where you would be. So you'd be at about 1.8 million at 60, not including contribution. So you should be well above that with continuing to save. And then that brings you to 60. So then oftentimes, especially with the pension, you'd have to just see like how many years of service. So sometimes there's a penalty, there's a reduction if you don't have enough years of service in. Depends how they do the calculation. So, you know, at age, using you as 60, your husband would be 65. So if you wanted to retire then, you just have to see what is the hit to the pension. Like, what's the magic number for you to stay by to get the, essentially the max where you don't have to stay till 67. Maybe at that point, you know, in 20 years, you have 26 point, you know, you might be over 25 years of service. So that might be fine. And you're over 55. There's all different variations of these pensions and how they're calculated. But if we just ran those numbers out and you continue to save, so let's say you have like closer to 2.5, then what you could do is still retire at age 60 and your husband 65, and then bridge yourself on your savings for the first 5 years. You know?
Yeah, I think the big thing that I've heard from other state employees, that because I do know, I have quite a few coworkers who have retired before 65. I will say they were still in the era of rule of 90, which is a different system that we have now.
Yeah.
But it's the healthcare cost, because that's the thing, we can stay on our healthcare, right? It's like kind of like a COBRA option, but it's very like, I think
even so you're before, not going to you won't retire with it.
Correct. I would not have healthcare. Yeah. And so there's like that 1% like healthcare funds, like they take off the top. Like we could use that to pay, right? There's different options, right? That are kind of a
benefit
option. But that's the one thing for us, like long term planning is the healthcare part. Like my husband's 5 years older, so he'll be on Medicare, right?
Yeah, he'll be on Medicare. He'll be fine. But yeah, then you'll wanna get closer, and even if you do like 63 and you say for 2 years we're gonna use the healthcare fund. But yeah, if you're not, I'm surprised you're not retiring with healthcare. They had that and they got rid of it.
You know, I don't know. That's a good question. I'd have to look more what those.
Okay.
I think it was something. I think that's when they created that 1%. Like,
yeah, that's probably what they did.
It was a cost savings measure, I'm sure, at some point. And actually, to be honest, we're actually currently facing huge, obviously, we're right now waiting for our new 2-year budget. And then it's also a negotiations year for our contract. And they're looking at increasing. They basically did not do good planning, or the projections were way off. And so it's the state of Minnesota, it's a self-funded healthcare, you know, fund, I guess you'd say. And so the costs have been way higher than expected.
And then they save for.
So they are now trying to balance that out through premium increases, increase deductibles, increase out-of-pocket expenses. And we do, because we have a child, ever since her diagnosis, we've maxed out her out-of-pocket every year. Like,
wow. And what is that costing? What is that costing you?
Right now, an individual out-of-pocket on our plan is $1,700. But we're spending about, I'd say, at least $3,000 out-of-pocket. Plus $24,000 for the family every year. And they're looking at increasing that, I think, to $2,500 per person. So I think between the premium increases, which are pretty substantial, they're looking at, and I like, we still have great insurance for what we pay, like even if they increase it, but I think a lot of people, you know, make concessions working for the state, because you don't make quite as much as private sector, but you get good benefits.
Yeah, that's why I was surprised with the retirement, because usually the reason you work for the state is you make less income, but you get a pension and good health benefits.
But I think the deal is that now looking at that, and this is still a negotiation, so I'm sure they'll find some middle ground, right? But right now it's looking like next year we'd be spending $4,000 more a year on healthcare.
Okay, total.
Yeah. More, no, on top. So that'd be like, more like, you know, the increase, most of that'd be a premium increase, but so we'd be looking at spending probably 4,000 more than this year. So that's like 7,000.
7,000 a year for medical. Yeah, which is very surprising for a state job.
And that's not including all the, and part, like, it's still part of it is just that we use a lot of healthcare, right?
Yeah, you use it, yeah.
Child situation, you know, when genetic testing can cost $30,000, but you only believe a cap. So, I mean, I think that for some families in our situation, they could go bankrupt real easy. So I can't complain, but something we have to plan ahead for, that I do expect that those costs will keep going up.
Yeah, I think it's smart to plan for it to go up. And then if it doesn't, then you're in a better situation. But you have plenty of cash on hand to cover that. And then how is it going budget-wise?
Overall, I think it's been okay. I think that we're still kind of finding the new normal. It's funny how it's the little things do add up. We try not to overschedule our kids, but it's like kid activities like cost a decent amount of money, like swim lessons and gymnastics and Little League, you know,
all the things. Yeah.
And I think because we're in a financial position where like we do value that, like that's something we do care about. Like we are spending more in those areas. The other thing I think I've looked back, we actually don't eat out that much more or probably less than we used to because both of our kids have dietary restrictions, but we do spend a lot on food because probably more than I would otherwise ideally spend on food because we have to buy certain products that are like meet the dietary needs and stuff. So I think like everyone, like our food budget has gone up. Not just if you have challenging, you know, I mean, it's kind of dark, but we don't eat out much because most restaurants can't feed our kids, you know? So it helps save. It is that it's nice, but, I will say we found a couple places that do, and then we definitely spend more. So they definitely get our restaurant dollar.
Because it's a peanut allergy, like a severe peanut allergy.
Our little guy who has that, he actually now, because he went through treatment, he eats peanut every day, actually.
Part
of the deal. Like he actually has to maintain kind of that, his body's kind of gotten used to it basically. So to keep that tolerance, he has to eat it. But he still has some, other food intolerances. He doesn't do well with dairy and soy. And then our other child is sodium restricted, which is very difficult for eating out.
How does that work? Because salt's in everything.
It is. It's challenging. There's certain restaurants that, I mean, to be honest, we never used to eat a lot of chain restaurants, but then they're the ones that publish, here's how much sodium is in stuff, here's the ingredients. So it's a balance. We have a couple local restaurants that are really great on working with us, but like, you know, we'll go out and like, you know, if we bring up, like she can't have the bun for a hamburger, you know, there's things like that. But yeah, so we just have had to learn. It's been a huge kind of learning curve to kind of figure that out. And thankfully, like both of our kids have been really like good eaters in terms of liking different foods. And so I can't imagine if they were picky kids, because they probably would have like very few foods they could eat.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's very challenging.
But the good thing is, I think we live in a place where, I mean, we're in a big enough city where there's different, like, places that, you know, different kinds of food stores and a co-op and things that we can find what we need. It just isn't always the cheapest.
Right. But obviously it's necessary. So
it's the funny part of like, you don't think about, you know, I think it's not, I had friends who had like dietary restrictions, but it isn't until you actually live it and try to figure out like how to feed your family that you really understand like the challenge and the, I mean, also like, thank goodness we like to cook and.
Right. Cause if you didn't like to cook, that would be so hard. Yeah, cause sounds like you can't even buy a lot of like pre-made stuff. Cause you have to know exactly what you have to make everything from scratch.
A lot. Yeah. A lot of prepackaged stuff is high in sodium. So that's
what I thought. I know,
or it uses one of the preservatives that our other kiddo can't have. So yeah, it's been, lots definitely. So I think in general, I think that our costs have gone up, but I think in general, we still like, I feel like we're mostly spending on like what the things we care about or like are important to us. I don't think we're like spending a lot of money. Like we talked before about travel and we're still taking, we would like to do like a big fun trip like to Europe or something else eventually, but right now it's been mostly focused on spending time with family and doing those trips.
Great.
I did actually, I guess we talked about it at the last one. We did also, because of that, we saved, we were able to do like the month stay with near our family and when our son was a baby on my maternity leave. And so I think we've seen like that benefit. It is more expensive now because every time we go, all of us, we do get like an Airbnb. It's no longer just like stay with grandma and grandpa.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's great. And then when is your young, like when, is there a point where the youngest won't need the aftercare or the summer? Does it drop off at some point? I know you said then it just basically picks up an activity so your budget doesn't really change.
Yeah, I think that eventually, I guess what we don't know yet is like before when I was working from home more, like if our daughter was old enough, she wouldn't have to always be in like summer care or like if the kids were old enough to be more independent. But now we've had a return to office. So I'm splitting more of my, putting more, I'm more in person than I used to be. So I don't know. Okay. I think eventually like big picture, I don't know if it'll, I'm sure activities, well, unless some activities probably cost $10,000 a year. I don't know. For the hockey families, they might say it's pretty close to travel and those costs, but I do think
Big in Minnesota is hockey.
Yeah. Thankfully, I think so far we've avoided our both of our kids are very obsessed with baseball and are in Little League, which is like a cost, but like a fraction of, you know, you don't have to buy too much. There's not too much gear you have to buy for baseball.
Yeah, hockey, that's true.
Yeah.
That's good.
And then I think, you know, the other part that with kind of our budget that we've been kind of giving, doing some, you know, some philanthropy kind of throughout because we do value that. But I think that's one of the things we thought about, like, how much are we putting in retirement? Like, can we back off at some point a little bit on that so we can do a little bit more giving than we have been? Because I think, you know, way back it was like, yeah, pay off these loans, we got to pay off this, you know. There was just kind of a very like tangible goal, and then when we finally could be putting more into retirement, we really were like, we have to catch up, right? We have to make up for all those years we were in grad school and, you know, making really really small salaries. So now it's at the point of life where it's like kind of that balancing act of wanting to still make sure we're saving enough for like being comfortable, and then also knowing our one child, this is like it's a condition that will never change. Like, I mean, I shouldn't say it won't go away. Like, she will have the rest of her life, and there's better treatments available, but they're very costly for when by the time she's an adult. So I think part of us is like, we know we'll probably need more depending on what happens with her life. Like, she could live a totally normal life and not be that big of a deal, or it could be super impactful for her, depending on how things go in the coming years.
So have you thought about saving for that specifically, if these treatments are expensive, and maybe, are they covered by insurance or it's just like not covered?
Yeah. So right now there's a brand new drug. So it's a hormone disorder, and there's actually, not for her age, but when she's 18 now, in theory, if it still exists and everything by then, there is like a hormone replacement therapy, and it is expensive, but I think a lot of insurances are starting to cover it. It just came to market literally this year. So I do expect that by the time she would be able to access it, I think it won't be as expensive, but there's just still, I mean, I think we've recognized that like with a chronic health condition, it's even just all of the doctor's visits and like, and just like the kind of, you know, seeing the different specialists a couple times a year and getting all the testing done and check, make sure things are going okay. You know, just one of her labs, you know, like one lab test, the other last time we had it done, it's $1,000 every time we have it done, you know, and we don't pay that because of insurance. Right. But, it's those parts. So I don't think we haven't been saving specifically for that just because there's a lot of uncertainty what that could look like, I think.
Yeah. And I would say that with your savings, like, because she's 4 now, or how old is your daughter?
The 8-year-old is the one who
has. 8-year-old, sorry, 8-year-old. So in 10 years, her husband would be 55, we'd be a little below the 59.5. But what I was going to say is you could always tap your Roth if you needed to at 59.5, like if you wanted to help pay for testing for her, if it was beyond the emergency fund or you didn't want to tap that. So what I would say is I would continue at your savings ratio. I think it's just going to give you a lot of optionality. It also give you a buffer if the kids have more medical expenses and there's, you know, like an experimental treatment they want to try or something, because there are always like these options that are not available through insurance if you're willing to self-pay, right? Mm-hmm. Or other things you could try. So I would continue with the savings ratio. I think it'll give you optionality to help the kids if they need, if it is more impactful throughout their lives as young adults, that you might want to step in and say, well, we'll help cover some of these medical costs because they might be quite high for a 22-year-old normally, right? Or a young mm-hmm. adult. And then what I would say with the giving is I would do it with working it into your budget and finding a place where we can enhance that, whether it's once the, like what I was initially thinking is when your youngest gets out of the preschool, when they're back in school and that saves you mm-hmm. like $10,000 a year, like maybe $5,000 goes to giving and $5,000 goes back in the budget or wherever that, maybe it's $3,000 extra because the medical went up by four. And so really not as much extra, but then $3,000 more for giving or $4,000 more for giving. And then also mm-hmm. with raises, like as you're making more money.
Yeah. Yep.
Keep increasing your giving, but then we're kind of keeping the savings ratio the same. And you can also gift from IRAs. Like, so there is what's called a qualified charitable distribution from an IRA where you don't pay tax and you give it to a charity. So there's okay. that too. Yeah. There's that down the line, which is why I would continue to do the savings because it doesn't preclude you from gifting to charities later on. And it actually is a tax benefit to do so.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that we were looking at too. So my spouse, most of his current 401k is with his old employer, right? And he hasn't rolled mm-hmm. it over yet. And so he was talking to the like company that his current 401k is with. And that's like, they are like, oh, you know, they have like a $250,000 threshold, but if you roll it into an IRA, they invest, you know, they kind of do their thing. But it's a 1% fee, which I know is like standard in that world, right? But also from I think like my husband's family, that's kind of the world they come from. They do that. And I come from very much working class background that like paying 1%, like so right now $3,000 a year or like as it grows, like
right,
$10,000 a year, right? Feels like a lot.
Yeah, it adds up over time. But what I will say is,
thank you for listening to the Future Rich podcast. This was part one of a two-part episode with Minnie. Please tune in next week on July 18th to listen to part two of this episode. Thank you.
Time for our disclaimer. The opinions voiced in this podcast are for general information only and not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. All performance references are historical and do not guarantee future results. Make sure that you consult with your own legal, tax, and/or financial advisor before making any decisions.
Hey, y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.